Thanks for tuning in to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Las Vegas Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
All right, guys, so we are getting to the end of it. I guess this is round 22 of 24, the final Grand Prix in the United States, the Las Vegas Grand Prix, which we were all expecting was going to be awful last year and happened to be one of the best races we probably had all season last year, other than Singapore, probably. But yeah, one that is in the middle of the night and is very oddly timed, as we were discussing before we came on. And I guess it's the one where, like, they let cars drive there until the, like, closest time up until race time. So a bunch of drivers were complaining about that before all the racing started and all the dust everywhere, but...
And all the trash that people just throw out of their car windows.
Right.
The dust was... I don't remember the dust last year. That was really apparent this year. Was that there last year?
I don't remember.
Like, it was this year? It was very... Like, Martin Brundle kept saying it looked like talcum powder all over the track.
Yeah. I don't know, because, like, last year the track was really new. So maybe they've had, like, a whole year of just, like, ingrained dust over the course of... You know, since the last race, whereas before, you know, last time, the track surface itself was only a few weeks old, so maybe didn't have enough time to accumulate it. I don't know. I'm just guessing at this point. I'm no meteorologist.
Yeah.
True.
But the weird thing about the, for whatever reason, during the Las Vegas Grand Prix, they like rent all these really expensive like tuxes for all the Sky Sports people to wear. So they just look extra fancy during the whole entire weekend. And, it's quite a spectacle at this race, but let's jump right into it. I mean, there wasn't really much action, so to speak, through the first few practice sessions, if I remember correctly, other than Lance's car randomly shut off with like 5 minutes left to go in the final practice session, so people weren't able to get hot laps in, which made it confusing for picking in coupes, but I can't remember. I don't think there were any crashes during the Culapin practice.
Was it? Oh no, that was in quali.
Yeah.
But I feel like what did happen in practice, because it felt like there was a lot of start stop action, like everybody was out of sync, it felt like, for some reason, because I remember getting to FP3 and just thinking like, I have no idea who's fast. Mercedes looked quick, but...
Mercedes, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ferraris looked good. Everyone thought they looked fast, although the times didn't necessarily show it. But whatever the commentators were seeing, they all seemed fairly confident.
In FP2, there was like a graphic that came up with about 2 minutes left in the session, and it showed some of the long run pace. So it was showing... you know, who was on what tire, how old the tires were, and you got the Ferraris who were like on 19 lap old mediums, and they were showing their pace, and it kind of went down, and then there was the McLarens were there, and then Lewis was on a soft, albeit 12, you know, a soft with 12 laps on it, I think it was. So, you know, my Coupes F1 picks were predicated on what we thought going in, which is that like this track, you know, in particular how it favored Ferrari last year and how well Charles did compared to the dominant Red Bulls. So everyone, if you were listening to any of the preview podcasts and reading stuff, kind of thought this was Charles Leclerc as the favorite for this race. Mercedes were topping all of the practice sessions, and it's like, okay, well, they're clearly fast, but what's going to happen in the race? They always seem to go backwards these days.
Right.
So it was like, you know what, going in, even with the practice, my money was still on Ferrari.
Yeah. Same.
Mine was on McLaren, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, McLaren didn't have a bad practice, or three practices either. They looked, you know, like they were in the mix like anybody else, quick on race pace.
I mean,
it at least they had a rear wing for it.
That's true. That's
albeit
true.
Not the Baku rear wing, and everyone was making a bit of a deal about how this was the only circuit after Baku that really they wanted to have their Baku wing on that had the extra little tippy up bits on.
Yeah, but, and Red Bull like cut out of their rear wing, right?
Yeah, they got an angle grinder to their spa spec wing. I guess in this cost cap era, they didn't want to put the investment in a wing that would only really be used for two weekends, like Monza and here. Baku, I guess, is a little bit slower and twistier, so they still stick with like a spa type rear wing. So I guess it's really a real direct consequence of the cost cap, where you've really got to look at what you want to put your development into. Now Ferrari are always going to have a Monza wing. They practically have a Monza spec car because they always want to be the guys, you know, they want to be the favorites going in for the Tifosi, which automatically puts them favorite here, puts them very, you know, up the order when you're thinking about Baku and places like that. But interesting that it was Red Bull of all teams who just took the most unelegant solution to their rear wing problem by just basically cutting massive like chunks out of the rear wing. It was awesome.
Yeah. And we saw Christian Horner. We couldn't hear what he said, but we saw him, you know, joking in the back of the garage, pointing at the rear wing, everything taken out of it. But anyway, we also, they did a little piece. I don't know if you saw any of the stuff before qualifying, but of Lewis looking back on the 2014 season, which was his, you know, first big battle with him and Nico for the championship, which was 10 years ago. So it was just cool seeing him watch all that stuff and reflect. But
I mean, I think that's one of the big downsides for me about having the race in Vegas at nighttime in Vegas, because time's always at a bit of a premium, but if it's on live, you know, you can make an excuse to sit down and watch it and shirk your family responsibilities. But you want to sit down and watch stuff that's kind of preamble and not relevant to the outcome when it's not on live.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't see any of the pre-race stuff, didn't see any, you know, any of that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
which is, you know, like I say, one downside to the timing of this race.
Yeah. And most of the time you're really not missing all that much. It's a lot of stuff that they're just filling time with to, you know, get you excited for the race. But, and that was really it for the stuff before qualifying. So once again, another poor Q1 session for Checo, getting knocked out in Q1 again. I don't know how many times it has been that he has not, you know, at least made it to made it into Q2. He's done that a few times and missed out on Q3, but missing out in Q1 again, it's just brutal.
Do any of you guys listen to the P1 podcast with Matt and Tommy? So the couple of English guys.
Occasionally, yeah.
They're super annoying. Matt in particular is like super annoying. But you know, occasionally
it's not star.
They'll be on the show next week. I mean, guest stars next week. Matt and Tommy. I mean, they're great, but it's like, God, seriously, guys, they're just so British. I mean, so anyway, I could say that. But they put out a lot of content, and a lot of it's really quite funny. But one of the things that they do in their preview podcast is like bold prediction. I think it was Matt said Checo wouldn't get out of Q1, and then they both agreed that it wasn't that bold of a prediction.
Yeah, I think we can agree on that.
And lo and behold, it was not. So
no,
he's had an absolute shocker the past.
Hasn't he scored like 40 points in the last 10 or 15 races or something?
Yeah,
it's bad. I mean,
that's really
was
bad.
This the year that he started off okay, or was that not even this year?
He won a race.
That was last year.
Has he won a race this year?
I don't think so.
I think it was last year. I can't even remember when it was that he was
like
good.
The beginning of last year, right?
Yeah, there was a year that he started off good, but I was like, I don't know if it was this year.
I think maybe he did did he? I don't know, because they're talking about how we've had so many different teams with race victories and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. But yes, he's not had the best time of it.
Yeah, in short, not good.
Not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just had a bunch of seconds early on. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because in the victories. Beginning of last season, we were talking about could Checo challenge Max for the championship.
We thought he was the only person that could challenge, and it turns out that was there's actually nobody could challenge.
It's like when the opening credits, when the F1 credits start.
I agree with Nick. No way we said that.
Don't make me have to go back and listen to everything.
You do that. You do that. And some people may have said, and I was like, absolutely no shot. but I do think it's quite amusing. Every session, like 5 minutes before the start, they do the official F1 opening credits with all the drivers, and it kind of goes through them all, and then you're kind of getting to the end, and then there's like a smug looking Checo in second. He's like, he's looking at that.
Poor Checo. But yeah, not good at all. And then another guy who has struggled as of late, he wasn't early on, but Franco crashes just as Q2 is ending, which is his second straight qualifying that he has crashed, I believe. And he's really fighting for one seat available.
Yeah, that's not what he wanted. He doesn't want to be the guy with the price tag. So, I mean, obviously a lot of talk at the moment is, that, is he going to be able, are they going to try and get him into whatever open seat may be available.
RB, I guess.
Then it's, you know, then he goes and sticks it in the wall, and it was kind of a bit, dude, you could have not done that, and that would have probably helped. Especially, you know, the Williams guys, did you see the video that they put out of like how they were getting the cars ready? They were waiting till 2, 3 a.m., like waiting for the cars to arrive back from Brazil in like pieces and boxes and all, and they pulled heaven and earth to get the cars, both cars turned around, ready to fly out to Vegas. And then before the race had even started, they had to basically go to a brand new chassis. That's got to be brutal for those guys. And, you know, just whatever, I don't know what their repair bill is now, but it's up there. And going into the weekend,
these parts cost money too, right? Like,
straight out of the cost cap.
Right, that's crazy. Yeah,
and going into the weekend, there was all this about the stat that Pierre Gasly has cost $0 in crash damage all season, for the whole season. I mean, it means he's not really been trying properly. He should try a bit harder.
But yeah, it was a brutal crash too. I mean, what I saw was 50G,
Oof.
And he was almost...
he clipped the cement wall.
Yeah. I mean, if he hadn't clipped that wall, it probably would have been... Well, maybe he probably wouldn't have crashed.
He wouldn't have crashed because he clipped the wall and it took his front left off.
Right.
And it was right on the apex, so it sent him straight on.
Yeah.
So that must have taken some of the force off of it, so who knows how awful that could have been. But he was able to get out with how these cars are able to distribute the weight of the crash. It's pretty impressive. He was able to get out and cleared all the medical tests and ultimately was able to race the following day. But George was able to take pole position in Q3 with Carlos next to him and Pierre again with another great qualifying time and Charles on the row behind them.
I mean, Pierre's time was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable what he put down.
How did he do it?
I have no idea.
It was in an Alpine, which, I mean, fair enough, in wet conditions, strange things happen. But this was a qualifying session. He put it P3. It was, I get it. The surface is a bit weird and the tire characteristics in those temperatures because it's cold. But that was an awesome lap.
Yeah. So was Sainz and so was George. I mean, the top three relative to everybody else, they laid it down on that last lap.
Yeah. One guy that didn't, of course, was Lewis, qualifying in P10.
Yeah.
Not quite sure what, I didn't quite see what happened. Did he have a
I think he might have had a moment. I think his time might have gotten deleted, his last
lap. Yeah, I think he had a time deleted, but yeah, anyway, long story short, Lewis on 10th. That's not, you know, P1, yeah. P10.
Yeah.
Shows what the, you know.
And Lewis had been the top time in at least the first two practice sessions. He might not have been able to get his final lap in the third one with the crash that happened in FP or Lance's car getting shut off. But yeah. Not great from Lewis there. I did pick him for pole in Goose for this race. So I was frustrated by that. But yeah, fantastic for George. And let's see.
And a big shout out from a qualifying perspective to Zhou Guan Yu. Managed to out-qualify Checo.
Wow.
Both Williamses.
Yeah. Yeah. His teammate.
Yeah. Did he out-qualify Bottas? Yeah.
Lance.
So that, I think that was his... What did tickle me a little bit was how in the build-up to the race, it kind of... Crofty does the starting grid and they start from the back and it's like in his worst starting position since this and his worst, you know, but Colapinto Pinto in his worst spot, Bottas in his worst spot, Lance in worst spot, Alonso, Albon in his worst spot since one, Alonso in his worst spot since, Checo in his worst spot since whatever, Zhou Guan Yu in his best qualifying since.
That's right. That was hilarious. And then George had some sort of issue either on the lap to the grid or while he was at the grid and about to go on the formation lap, but I guess they were able to figure it out. I don't know if you guys saw that, but he had some sort of...
I didn't see it, but I think later, I think during like the first lap or so of the race, they were talking about how George had had trouble doing his practice starts coming off the line right. And then on his installation lap and then coming off the line for the formation lap, maybe. So that could have been it.
Continue the conversation on pine-sports.com. That's pine-sports.com and the Pine Sports Discord, which you can find linked on the website. And join us in a one-of-a-kind fantasy Formula One contest at coopsf1.com. That's coopsf1.com, where you can put your theories to the test.
Ultimately, George did okay at the start of the race. He had an incredible jump and was able to stay in P1 fairly easily through the first two turns. But impressively, Charles got by Pierre in no time from the jump and then held it along the outside of the S's around Carlos to go from P4 to P2. It was some great racing in the first couple corners of the race.
Yeah, and the one thing on the start, a little bit further back as well, Piastri lined up, I mean, only marginally too far forward. I mean, looking at the...
That's right.
Looking at the pictures, it didn't look to me like he was out of his grid spot.
No.
But he got hit with a false start or a start infringement, whatever, because he was...
Do they have a meter or like a sensor that reads that?
Yeah, or is it sensors in the track, I think. Yeah,
I think so, right? Like, if it goes off, that's it. It's just, it's over.
It's digital. It's like, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, there's no judgment.
Yeah, so there's no arguing. Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Yeah. Not as egregious as Checo's, whatever it was, the last race or the race before
that. Was that Mexico?
Wait.
Mexico?
Yeah. He was like, yes. Half a car.
Yeah. but regardless, it doesn't matter how far forward you are, you get the penalty regardless. And let's see, lap four, Charles was getting very close to George, tried a couple times to make that move stick. We saw him go side by side with George towards the end of the lap, through turns like 14 and 15 before they get to the line, but George was able to stay ahead. We see Max pretty much in the same camera view get by George where Charles was trying to make the move stick. Pierre falling back fairly quickly and Max moving up again into P4. And let's see.
Yeah, that was we past hear there Pierre, might be a, right? Because at this point, Pierre had made, like, he'd been swallowed up by a few guys. I don't know what the deal was. Maybe he was just getting his, you know, not getting his tires ready, but he did not offer much of a resistance to anyone behind him for the first few laps.
No. He was just dropping, and then we heard that there might be a plastic bag stuck in George's car somewhere, and then I guess we see it kind of whatever it was, whether it was a bag or one of like the advertising on the side of the walls, but it was stuck on the side, on like the floor on the side of the car, but I guess it didn't really affect him too much early on. And let's see, we see on lap 7 Lewis going side by side with Oscar, but Oscar just took the inside line, was able to stay ahead for now, but he was losing time to Yuki ahead of him, who was pulling away. And then all of a sudden we hear that Charles has lost the spot again to Carlos, and then he almost immediately loses the spot to Max right after that, going all the way back to P4 where he started.
Yeah, he just totally cooked his tires.
That was shocking. Like you said, it was just, you didn't even see it happen, didn't notice it happen. All of a sudden, it was just happening.
Yeah.
That was definitely surprising, and he just dropped.
Yeah, this was the tires just in a very weird window in this, because the low temperatures, so it's not thermal degradation, which kind of occurs over a period of time, but it's, I think they called it cold graining or something?
Yeah.
Where if you don't bring it up to temperature properly, then the surface of the tire just goes, I give up, like this. And that's kind of what happened for Charles. I mean, he put too much energy through the tires early on without warming them up steadily in that battle to try and get past George. And they just gave up on him after just, 7 or 8 laps?
Yeah.
What could have been, like, I guess, but we want hard racing. We don't want the guys to push the cars as hard as they can, but
yeah,
like, that was shocking how quickly it lost its positions. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's it. It's a night race in the desert in November. And Martin and I, we were just in Arizona, which is not too dissimilar of a climate from Nevada, but once that sun went down, it definitely gets a heck of a lot colder.
Yeah.
And you're kind of in a situation where it's not like you don't have track temperature like you have in every other race.
And I think they didn't know for sure, but I think they had the information. I think the plan was not to go aggressive. I forget what articles I read, but it seemed like that was a message that was delivered before the race, like,
yeah, because even qualifying, they were taking 2 warm-up laps to make sure that they got the tires to the right operating window
slowly enough. Yeah,
but then you, but then the green flag goes and everyone just wants to race.
Yeah,
I mean, track position is also, well, you thought going into the race was key. It was quite a bit of overtaking, but I could see. He's an F1 driver. He's going to push. He's going to go for it. And he was so close. How do you not go for it? I mean, I legitimately thought he was going to get it. And then they panned away to whatever other battles in the midfield for a lap or two. And suddenly he was just falling off a cliff.
Yeah. And then we saw Lando finally be able to pass Pierre after a few laps after Max was able to do it. So he lost some time to Max, and obviously that's what we were watching closely during this race, was if Lando was able to pass Max to keep this championship fight going for a little bit longer. But on lap 9, Lewis made another great move to get by Yuki and Oscar, and all the way up into P7 already. So Lewis showing he had the pace, just a poor showing in qualifying. But like you said, Charles cooked his tires early, so he already came into pit on lap 10. Lando also came in to pit with him. And it was
that was actually a shocking moment in itself. Realizing Charles just absolutely destroyed his tires, and immediately behind him is Lando.
So it almost gave me a little bit of like, oh, okay, it's not so bad. Like other people are at least in the same situation. So yeah, that was, you know, the first moment when you really realized, okay, the tires are going to be a thing this race.
Yeah.
Is this the softer set of the tires, you know, cause they can do, I think.
Right. Yeah. They did C3, 4, and 5, the right. Three hardest in the range.
Okay.
But the softest. Yeah.
Oh, the softest. In the range. Yeah. The softest. Right. So yeah.
But the C5, I guess, is the one that is, I mean, it'll only last 3 or 4 laps.
Right.
Right.
Although someone did start on the soft.
Yeah.
Right.
Alonso did 4 laps on it.
Oh, it was 4? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a lot.
And then he went on to the hard. But yeah, nobody ran soft. You're
going
at
for
all.
The 9 stop strategy.
It did not work. But let's see. Max with DRS was able to get by Carlos and into P2, but Carlos was already considering pitting, and it looked like he was coming in to pit, as well as Yuki, Pierre, and Oscar. But is this when Carlos, I guess, ducked out of, or no, I guess he did come in.
No, that was the second one.
Yeah, it was the second one.
So Carlos, Yuki, Pierre, and Oscar all came in. Oscar had a 5-second penalty from the start of the race, so he had to take that during this pit stop. And then
it must feel pretty crazy for them, because I remember when all those pits started happening, like you're so charged up with the start of the race and the energy of all that. Like I was even like, oh, it just seems crazy in the pit lane. I can't imagine being on the team like 10 laps in and you've got guys, you know, basically the whole field coming in and out at the same time because they're still so bunched up. It's got to feel insane to be part of that.
Yeah. I did see an in-car video of Franco Colapinto coming into his pit box and nearly running over James Vowles.
Oof. That is not a way to secure your seat for the next year.
It's like James is just wandering across and he's kind of coming in and James kind of looks and goes, oh crap, and jumps out of the way.
So that's on him.
I guess that's on James.
Yeah. It's like you're supposed to look before you cross.
But that's the chaos of the pit lane. Right? There's so much going on.
Yeah. You'd think he'd know when his own driver is coming in to pit, though.
He's a sharp lad, too.
Yeah. that's funny. So let's see. Max comes in to pit after that, and he came out in a whole bunch of traffic. He was behind Joe, who is still out on his first set of tires. And then George pit on the next lap, but only fell one spot to Lewis, who I, you know, everyone else in front of him had pit, but still Lewis driving really, really well. Ocon went in for a pit stop and missed his pit box. So he had to go all the way around for another lap and pit again. So he dropped all the way to the back.
That cost him a ton of time.
Yeah. And that's when you look at Alpine, right? It's like they'd had such a great weekend last week that like these kind of errors.
Just like hitting a drive down the center of the fairway.
And then the next hole. Or the next shot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But apparently they told Ocon to do the opposite of what Hülkenberg did. So they said, if Hülkenberg pits, you stay out. If Hülkenberg stays out, you come in. But then they didn't tell the pit crew. And so they weren't in, the pit crew weren't out there. Ocon went through and he's like, I didn't see my pit board. I didn't know where to pull in. It's like, well, no, of course not, because there was no one there. So then he had to go around again.
Yeah.
You know, he gave himself a drive-through penalty. Which,
right. Yeah.
It costs him 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And which, when, and in the midfield battle, when it's so tight and you've got to really ace everything to get the points, you can't have those kind of errors come in.
No.
Yeah. Maybe he's helping his future team, you know, going to Haas next year. Hey, put an extra 20 seconds on. but yeah, brutal for those guys. Let's see. Lewis finally pits on lap 14. He falls behind Lando. So he made up some great time on that first stint. I think he, how far up did he move? So three spots.
Oh, okay. Only three?
I guess after all the pits.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
When he had finally come in, that is...
And in true Lewis form, right back to his old championship years, immediately complaining about... what did he say? I was like, come on.
He came out in traffic and he goes, how many places did I lose?
Come on, like, come on, guys. Like, complaining immediately. It's like, no, dude.
He's back in form. Lewis Hamilton's back in form.
Yeah.
Well, because he could sense, he could sniff that the car was good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he wants to move up.
Yeah.
Well, is your guy next year, Mark? So,
yeah, get used to saying, Lewis, yeah, battling away.
Yes.
I was all ready to, you know, give him props for the improvement that he had over, because last week it was terrible, even worse than this week. So.
Verbally quitting on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it couldn't have got any worse. So this is an improvement.
Yeah. And then let's see. So pretty much two laps after that is when we hear Pierre yelling that his power just completely shut off. And then it pans to his car and you see a huge cloud of smoke pop out of the back, which you barely see in races these days when, you know, the engine just explodes essentially. And that was it from starting in P3, an amazing qualifying session. And
yeah, I mean, thankfully, finish, man.
I was gonna say Alpine shooting themselves in the foot yet again. Not that they could control that, but
yeah. But thankfully, he'd just come out of the last left hander by the Cosmopolitan. And so those of you who know Vegas, and so it meant that he, under his own power, albeit the engine was eating itself, he could make it back to the pits. If he was in another part of the track, that would have easily been a safety car.
Yeah,
at that point, which, I mean, would have been interesting given... Oh,
would have been awesome.
Would have been great.
But given who'd pitted at what point there, I don't know quite who hadn't pitted at that stage, but Zhou Guanyu could likely have pitted and come out in the lead or something weird, right? Because this was literally just during the pit stop phase. So clearly the leaders who'd pitted wouldn't go back in, but everyone behind them would have benefited from like 10 free seconds of race time.
Yeah.
Checo. that's his power move.
Yeah. he was the guy on hards, right? So he was hoping for something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was gonna go long. I saw a thing on Reddit where it said that basically he got an amazing toe from who was it in front of him? Zhou, I think.
He got a toe from Zhou?
No. And anyway, it's basically his engine like just over revved itself. Can it just because it so fast? Really? Like it said, it reached almost 13,000 RPM.
It wasn't ready to go fast. Yeah. They didn't build the car to go fast.
Like, stop! What are you doing?
Yeah, basically, you got
I suspicioned, if that's a word, that maybe that was they had jacked up the engine mode or something for the weekend, and that's why he did so well in quali, and this was the result of that decision.
Apparently, I don't know that much about this stuff, but apparently all the gear ratios are fixed and everything, so it just was like maxing out in eighth gear, and he had DRS plus a toe, and it just hit close to 13,000 RPM and exploded. I mean, this was pretty common, right, Nick, back in the 80s and 90s.
13,000, that was like revving in the 80s. That was like, when idling.
They didn't have limits. They didn't have limits on how many engines you could have. It was just based on how deep your pockets were. So they were running 19,000 revs. So I don't know how.
I remember it used to get multiple engine failures per weekend, per race. Yeah,
multiple. Yeah.
I don't know. I was kind of chuckling when I heard that, you know, I forget where it was, but someone said, yeah, maybe it's a disgruntled engine factory worker in Vichy or Viri or whatever it is. Who was like, yeah, you hit a big red button and launch the engine.
I'm giving myself nostalgia now because I can hear Murray Walker in my head saying something like, is that blue smoke out the back of Schumacher's engine? It is blue smoke. You know, and one side going up and the other, the both banks of the engine failing. Just a spectacular sight. But yeah, not something that we see anymore in Formula One.
No.
Yeah, I remember we don't see failures.
No, I mean, I remember the British Grand Prix. I don't even know when it was, like a long time ago, like 2000-ish. I went and my brother said, Takuma Sato's engine doesn't sound too good. And then like four corners later, it just went.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. But yeah, like you said, Checo was the only one that had not pit at this point, and it was showing because he was dropping down like crazy. So I guess Lewis technically was in P6 because Checo was in P2, but had not pit to this point. But like I said, he was just falling quickly. He went from P2 on lap 15 to P7 on lap 17. And then he came into pit and dropped all the way back down to 14th place. So not going very long on that set of hard tires. But Lewis was flying. He took the fastest lap on lap 19 and then was in DRS range of Charles ahead. And then, let's see, I guess on lap 26 now, Albon retired from the race with, I didn't hear what the issue was that caused him.
I think it was overheating. Like maybe there was a bag that had gone into
a
side pod or something like that. But apparently it was an overheating issue. So they kind of called him in to save the engine because
yeah,
they're running out of money at this point.
Right. So yeah, unfortunate for him. Oscar Kate was the first guy, I believe, at least of the top 10 to come in for their second stop. And then Max ended up coming in on the next lap to hold him off. Did they purposely switch Charles and Carlos or yep. did that just happen on track?
No, they told him to switch. Yeah. And it was like a surgical maneuver, right, by Carlos to let,
because that's where Lewis was right there as well.
Lewis,
right?
Yeah, he managed to let Charles through and keep Lewis behind him for a minute at least. Right. Anyway,
I guess yeah. So this was the moment when Lewis and Carlos were coming into pit, but then Carlos crossed the pit entry line, but then went out of the pit entry area to get back on track, but I didn't ever hear anything come from that.
Nothing. It didn't seem right. It looked dangerous, and you'd think that was a penalty, right? There's definitely, you definitely, when you're exiting the pits, you can't cross the line going out. Going in, I don't know. I guess not, because it was blatant, right? It was clearly...
Yeah. Apparently the stewards looked at it and said, you know,
that's fine.
It's all good. I mean, they did give him, they did but delete his lap time.
You can't say any curse words.
They did delete his lap time.
Yeah. Right.
So they acknowledged that he had a track limits violation, cutting the corner.
If that's a
so that added to his
is
tally.
That a, is that a faster, li- oh, added to his tally of track limits. All right, I guess.
Yeah, because you still get, three strikes, four strikes, whatever it is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. For sure.
Although, I don't know. I mean, obviously, the big news, well, not the big news, but some news going into the weekend was that Niels Wittig had been sacked as the race director.
That's right.
And, you know, so he was very German and been, you know, with his track limits thing. So it's going to be, you know, I don't know how that's going to work if the new guy, Rui, whatever his
Rodriguez?
Name is.
Rodriguez?
I think he's Portuguese or Brazilian or something like that. But Rui Costa, maybe? No, is he a footballer? I can't remember. Anyway, he sounds like a goalkeeper. Rui Marquez? Anyway,
Costa was a striker.
Now let's stop before our Latin listeners start ditching us and tuning into someone else. Apologies to all of those listeners.
All one of them.
Yeah, that listener over there.
That's 20% of our audience, Jason. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is that going to change? But anyway, point was, he didn't get any sort of penalty. And I've been trying to think of other times. I think I do recall, like, Kimi Raikkonen maybe at somewhere doing something similar where they called him in and told him to stay out and he cut left. And I don't recall there being a penalty for that. But anyway.
I don't remember ever seeing something. Like, it didn't even look like he lifted. It, when they put the camera back on him, he looked like he was full throttle off and then skipped the entire curb right back onto the track.
Well, if you're going to have to stay out, then you stay out quickly, right?
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. But yeah, like you said, Lewis was able to get pretty close to him. But Carlos did ultimately come in on the next lap. And he'd been wanting to come in for a while, right? He had been complaining on the radio saying that he wanted to get in earlier. Let's see, Lando came in for his second stop a few laps after that. And then Lewis at the end of lap 32, going down the long straight into turn 14, was able to get by Max, who looked like he practically let him go. And Lewis is now on merit in P2.
Yeah,
really Max, incredible drive.
Max had his mission for the day, and it wasn't to cook his tires defending a position from Lewis when Lando was a couple of spots behind him.
Yeah, especially with what happened to Charles early on in the race. He did not want to deal with that. George Pitt from the lead for his second pit stop and kept the lead by over 13 seconds when he came out. So George was having a good race up at the front, but Lewis was gaining on him. Lap 36, he was under 9 seconds away from George now. So possible with 15 laps to go. Checo was able to get by Liam and Kevin at the same corner through turn 14. We saw an incident in turn 14 last year, right? That I feel like that was the corner with Charles, maybe Charles and Checo.
Charles overtook Checo on the last lap into 14.
That's right. So yeah, Checo passing two at one turn.
That was pretty crazy. It looked crazy from every camera angle you saw. You know, he just had an opportunity to go up the inside while they were figuring out each other on the outside, and three wide going into that tight area. Absolutely were like, who's
and there's
on the outside?
No exit. There's no exit. It was it Hulk or was it Magnus? I think it was Magnussen, right?
It was Kevin, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, totally thought he was going to be in the wall. Like, but everybody had level heads.
The highlight of the race for me, I think it only lasted, what, like 7 seconds, that whole thing. But it was just great.
Yeah.
And they all kind of came out and Checo did something.
Yeah. That's his highlight. His highlight of the race.
I mean, that for me has been Checo's.
Cue the cowboy music riding into the sunset.
With Danny waiting for him in the sun. Oh, God. Let's see. Max loses a spot to Carlos. So he, after making up all that time, is now falling back himself.
Was this when he was on the radio to GP and said, should I fight with these Ferraris or what? And GP's like, yeah, go on then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why not?
Give it a try.
He was still, what, 10 seconds, or Lando was 10 seconds behind him, and he was in a comfortable spot at this point. Let's see, we saw Nico pass Yuki down the straight into turn 14 to take P8, and it's a crucial battle there for the constructors between the Alpines, who were non-existent in this race, and then the Haases and the RBs. What I guess they're fighting for P6, P5, P6.
So yeah, great move by Nico. Let's see.
They've gotten a lot better with their graphics with championship standings throughout the race. I thought that was nice, not overdone, where, you know, you kind of saw live updates of what was going on in the midfield, also at the top.
Yeah, and with the midfield, that was a graphic that they brought up, because obviously the Alpine RB Haas battle right there, that was changing.
Yeah,
by lap the lap. Lap, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be, you don't want it, the interesting part of it, the race weekend, to be who's clinging on to sixth in the constructors. But it was kind of an interesting kind of thing for geeks like us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're probably not listening to this podcast if you don't care about that midfield battle.
That's true.
Probably true. Probably true. And then weird timing, they showed that if Carlos had pit when he wanted to, that he potentially could be in P2 at this point of the race. I just thought that was odd.
I think Mark agrees with my mindset in this, which is like, nah.
Yeah.
So many things.
Seems a little crazy.
He's just going to suddenly get a bunch of seconds from just out of thin air.
I think even Crofty was like, but he's like 10 seconds behind it right now or something like that. So yeah, that one seemed a little odd.
If he'd have pitted one or two laps earlier, I don't think it made the difference.
I mean, they were claiming that like the undercut was 4.5 seconds strong per lap, I guess, because it was like 9 or 10 seconds between the two. So whatever. It was very strange timing.
Yeah, but if you were to kind of undercut someone and try and pull 4 or 5 seconds on them, then I think Charles demonstrated that you'll only be ahead of them for about 5 laps before your tires completely go off.
Exactly.
And you're back behind them again. So,
but yeah, that was strange. And let's see, Charles into turn 14 was able to break later than Max and move past him now and into P4, another moment of Max just not defending. And then Lewis was looking like it was a small chance, but still a chance. But then he had a moment where he had to go through the runoff and lost a few seconds. And that was really it. I mean, Lando came in on the second to last lap to come in for the fastest lap point, which he was able to do on the last lap. But George comfortably was able to win his second race of the season. He becomes the 7th driver this season to win multiple times, which is a first in F1 history.
Really? Wow.
The first time that 7 drivers have won at least 2 races in a season.
Although Spa, George did actually win, and gifted the win to Lewis, who didn't win on the road, but then he did win in Silverstone. So, but George did benefit quite heavily from Lando and Max in Austria. So yeah. I guess it all washes out, but
Lando handed Oscar a race win too.
Yeah. But point being, there have been plenty of race winners this year.
What did we have last year? 3 race winners total? Max, correct. Checo, and Sainz, I think.
Yep. Yeah.
And what's crazy is this year, all of that happened like round 10 on.
Right. Yeah. From
because Max
on,
won like
every
7 race out of the first 10.
Yeah.
Early on, it looked like it was going to be a repeat, and then it all went crazy. And you know, hopefully this continues for the foreseeable future, right?
Yeah. Looks like it should be pretty crazy for next season. But we got the return of the Rolls Royces on the track. I don't know how far away the podium is from where they end up parking the cars. Do they just go around?
They need easy pass.
Yeah, I guess so. But they had a Rolls Royce just for Max and GP, and then one that the podium finishers had to squeeze into.
And yeah, then a third one.
It's not really that far. Yeah, there are 3. So why are all 3 podium finishers
a pace in, rolls
in one?
Right. Yeah.
I guess they want to have like the cool down room sort of thing. Yeah, so you can hear what they're talking about. But it's, I mean, you'd think they put on a mad stretch limo or something like that with, you know, like swimming pool on the back or whatever, hot tub on the back, just because it's like super Vegas. But like having the three guys all kind of wedged in this massive Rolls Royce just still feels really weird to me.
Yeah. It was odd.
Yeah. It doesn't feel right.
Yeah. But we got to see Terry Crews doing the post-race interviews.
Also did not feel right. He was too giddy.
He was a total fanboy. He was like, oh, look at this.
That was great.
I did like that though. I thought it was different.
Yeah. It was just weird because there was like no people around, you know? It was just like the fountain behind them, and then Jensen Button randomly came in after one interview was already done. And but I didn't mind Terry Crews being the one doing it. That was cool. But yeah, that is it for the Las Vegas Grand Prix winners and losers. I mean, obviously, Max taking his fourth driver's championship in a row, joining a very exclusive club. Can we name all the other four-time winners?
Yes,
I guess.
Hamilton,
Lewis, Schumacher,
Vettel, Fangio,
Prost.
Now Max.
Senna only won three.
He won three. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. I mean, you got to put him in the conversation. Maybe he's not the best of all time yet, but you have to say that he's in the conversation now. You can't argue otherwise, right?
He's knocking on the door of tier one.
Yeah, he's got a few more years to go. Let's see what happens next year. We're definitely all excited, right? I mean, it depends on how the cars shake out. It's going to be, there's a massive changes coming to the specs next year. Not really.
Or the year after.
Nothing. The year after.
26 is the big change. So hopefully
we'll have some
good. What we have right now will continue into next year's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Max's legacy, though, is, you know, different from Lewis and Vettel, is that he's now winning champion, or at least has this one championship, too, I would say, where you can't say, oh, his car was just like dominating the field kind of level.
Yeah.
You know, you clearly see the racecraft and the long-term decisions that he makes in the moment, which is amazing in itself.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a different breed.
Yeah, he built the gap in the first six or seven races of the year. And then when he didn't have the fastest car, he did what was necessary to maintain that. I mean, you look back to Miami, I guess, which is when Lando started winning. He won the first one. But I think the gap now is the same as it was there.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's maximized every weekend. Yeah. Whatever the best result he could have had, aside from Austria, obviously they had that coming together. But even then, he maximized what he could given the contact. I think he still came home in fourth or fifth, right? He's just constantly done what was needed. Whereas McLaren had their own operational issues. Lando could have done better certain races over others. That's how you win championships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw any of the post-race interview stuff, but Lando essentially said, like, before the summer break, if they had been ready to go, so to speak, like in hindsight, looking back, they weren't really ready for the spotlight up until Zandvoort when they really figured it out. And by that point, they were already too far behind to kind of really make it a real fight. Although it looked pretty real before Brazil.
Yeah, we all dreamed, didn't we? But yeah, just hopefully Lando learns from this, right? Like hopefully everybody does that, you know, it's a long season and there's a lot of racing to be done. I mean, who's in with a realistic shout next year of winning the title? You got to think five or six drivers, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, McLaren by being in this situation, they'll have learned how to be in this situation. Yeah. The benefit that Red Bull have had is because they've been in this situation a lot. Just like when you see Mercedes on weekends where their car is in that operating window and it's working for them, they maximize the results that they can get, right? With Ferrari, they're doing a better job. That you cast your mind back 2 years.
Thank you, Nick. They're improving.
That was kind of like Crofty's grid interview.
I didn't see it.
But or not the grid interview, but you know what you were saying earlier, like worst position starting, worst position starting. Yeah. Yeah. Ferrari, yeah. They're improving. Doing okay.
Yeah,
yeah, but it just shows you the and fair credit to Fred, right? Just doing a better job every time. The more you're in it, the more you learn from it, the better you get at being there. And so I think McLaren, you know, obviously Andrea Stella, not been a team principal for that long, but clearly showing that he kind of runs an organization that can be in that position. And now they've just got to not mess it up next year. And hopefully their car will be good from the start of the year. Whereas they've been kind of handicapped at the start of the last two seasons. So it's funny we're talking about like the end of the season and all this stuff as if there aren't two more races ready to go.
Yeah.
I thought that was
constructors. Constructors is completely up in the air at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's what, 23 points Ferrari behind McLaren right now? Now, Qatar should suit the McLaren.
Should, but we should. How many races do we keep saying this team should be suited and it just falls upside down?
But Abu Dhabi should favor Ferrari. You know, the Ferrari prefers the shorter transition corners, like the 90-degree type stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas the McLaren likes the faster, sort of longer duration corners. So we got two races coming where one should theoretically suit McLaren and one should theoretically suit Ferrari. So it should be pretty finely balanced a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah. Very exciting stuff coming forward. I mean, you got to put Mercedes as winners this weekend. Obviously, a 1-2 finish for them.
They say they don't know where the performance comes from.
Exactly. I was about to totally say, weird. Like, they're happy that they won, but they don't really know why they won.
Sounds like my round of golf on Sunday. It was like, I was driving the ball. I don't know why, but it was doing well. I don't know where it came from, but it happened and it was good.
Yeah. So, essentially they said they know that they do well in like rainy and cold weather, but they don't know why. So regardless, a great result for them. Carlos getting another podium towards the end of his time at Ferrari. Obviously I think that the Ferraris wanted more from this race. So, you know, I guess they're both winners and losers, so to speak. But, you know, making inroads in the constructors, so that's great. And then Nico and Yuki getting points for their teams. I think Haas passed Alpine again with them having such a bad weekend. I don't know if Red Bull did or RB did as well. But
No, RB are just behind Haas, 3 points behind. Haas is only 1 point ahead of Alpine. So those three are neck and neck.
And then on to losers. I mean, I guess you got to put Lando as a loser. Just not a good weekend for them at all. Disappointing, and obviously his fighting the championship, like we said, officially over. That's not supposed to be there. And then Checo is just
just a perennial
loser.
He did make that pass, though.
He did that pass again over those two. I thought he might have been surprised that there was another car in front. I don't know. But
he didn't see the other one.
He did make it stick.
So yeah, obviously Alpine losers. Albon has really been in bad form the past couple of races, and another DNF for him.
And well, but like, you know, their story is, because remember most of the season, and like Williams, Albon in particular, there was this like, they were building and he was in the mix, but they just don't have the money. And then, you know, they cap it off with what's been going on lately. They can't keep up with the development to to stay where they start.
Yeah.
Which stinks, but they've made big strides, so.
Yeah, and they should be pretty excited for what's to come next year, getting Carlos in their team. As much as Franco has been amazing for getting in the team so quickly, but yeah, exciting stuff for next year. And then Martin, on to Coops.
Yeah, no, I mean, another topsy-turvy Coops F1 week, you know, again, hard to predict, you know, who's going to pick up the points. So low scoring, team RSP with a top score of 240 points this week, freaking fast, Frank, 230. And my buddy Juan Pablo, third, an old friend of mine from university.
Is that Charles?
Nice.
That is Doug, actually.
Well, that's Doug, Zach.
But yeah, and at the top of the table, R. Heatley reclaiming top spot for his own, or their own.
Dominantly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, terrible predictions by them last week at only 77 points, but came roaring back. But yeah, it's still tight at the top between those two, prancing to first, our very own Mark and R. Heatley. So we'll see what happens. I'm done, but Nick, you moved up. Jason, you moved up as well to 30th.
Yeah.
So making a run, beating out prediction consensus now, Nick.
Three of us are in the top 30.
Yeah, all right. Not me.
We're good on average together.
Yeah, yeah. I'm dragging down. Exactly. I'm not drinking the juice. Actually, I didn't move. I didn't realize that. I didn't change positions at all. Stayed in 129. That's hard to do. So the less that can be said about it.
Are you the only person that didn't change position?
Nope, there's a new 76th did not change.
There you go.
That is a rarity.
There's a few as you get lower down the table. But yeah, well, two races to go, two races in 2 weeks.
Yep.
And
another sprint race weekend next week.
Oh, is it? Okay. And apologies to those who had issues with the deadline changing on Coops F1. I always mess it up when the daylight savings ends or whatever it is, but I'll sort it out. Yeah. All picks were updated as emailed.
He has to give up the corner. I had to bounce ahead. What is wrong with these people?
Thanks for listening to the 2024 Las Vegas Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and join us next time for our review of the 2024 Qatar Grand Prix. See you then.